This is the April 2025 edition of Review, the Journal of Blind Veterans UK. After the Darkness. Special member-made VE Day candles available now. A selection of candles to commemorate the 80th anniversary of VE Day can be purchased now, with 50% of the profits being donated to our charity. To explore the available scents and to place an order, visit Seabreeze Candles, that's SEABREEZE candles, all one word, .co.uk. Making candles allows me to channel my thoughts and emotions into something beautiful, and I often think of the warmth and light they bring to spaces, much like the support Blind Veterans UK provides to veterans. And that's Tony, one of our members, and you will hear more about Tony's story later in the recording. Looking ahead, from competition to commemoration, a message from your chair, Barry Coop. At the time of writing, we are still under consultation on our proposal to end the charity's activity at our Llandudno Centre, so there is nothing to update for our members right now. Thank you to those of you who have written to me to share your thoughts on the proposal, and to those of you who have said that you will be attending our member conference next month. The conference will be in Birmingham on the 22nd and 23rd of May. All being well, it will be led by our Chief Executive, Adrian, and will give you the chance to share your thoughts, feedback and ideas on our future direction. I will be attending and look forward to seeing all those who can attend. You can register up until the 15th of April, and due to expected high levels of interest, members expressing their interest to attend will be chosen via a random ballot. I would like to congratulate members Andy Allen and Mark Abel for not only being selected to compete at the recent Invictus Games in Canada, but also winning medals. And you will hear about Mark's experiences later in the recording. The country and our charity is gearing up for the celebrations that will surround the 80th anniversary of VE Day. Any veteran serving that day will now be at least 98 years old, and most are over 100. Taking time to recognise their service and sacrifice for all our freedoms is arguably more important than ever before. That is why our engagement team have been capturing as many of these stories as possible, and this also allows us to share them with you in review, and you will hear some of those stories later in the recording. Thank you to all those Second World War members for sharing their stories. I never cease to be amazed at the different skills our members can turn their hand to, and it is great that member Tony Haskey has started his own business making scented candles. Tony is now selling a special VE Day 80 candle for Blind Veterans UK, and you'll hear more about this later in the recording. Members like Tony, Andy and Mark really are an inspiration and remind us all that achievement, whatever your goals may be, is always possible.
News. Raising money with pre-loved books. Former Army serviceman Chris Child has raised over £500 for Blind Veterans UK through his long-running charity bookstalls. Chris, who served with the Royal Logistics Corps, has been running bookstalls for over 25 years, dedicating the last decade to regular fundraising at Salisbury Charter Market. With the help of around 12 volunteers and a steady stream of donated books, Chris has raised money for various charities and schools. He decided to support Blind Veterans UK in November, inspired by blind veteran Dave Cole, who attends the Salisbury and Amesbury Armed Forces and Veterans Breakfast Club, which is hosted at the Field Kitchen once a month. Dave says, "I'm so grateful to Chris for supporting the charity with the bookstall. I now go along every week to help run the bookstall, regardless of which charity is benefiting." Since then, Chris has hosted 3 bookstalls in aid of the charity, with another planned for the 8th of March. Thanks to the generosity of local book lovers, he has already raised more than £500. He hopes to continue growing his total and encourages others to get involved, whether by donating books, helping at stalls, or setting up similar initiatives in your community. You can find Chris and his bookstall on Facebook by searching for the charity bookstall at Salisbury Charter Market. Annual Member Conference 2025. We are pleased to invite you to the Blind Veterans UK Member Conference on the 22nd to 23rd of May 2025. The conference, led by our Chief Executive, Adrian Bell, will give you the chance to share your thoughts, feedback and ideas on important decisions regarding our future strategy. At the same time, you will be able to get together with your fellow members and meet senior staff from across the charity. The venue is Ashton Conference Centre, Aston University, Birmingham, B47ET. It starts at 11 a.m. and finishes at 4 p.m. the following day. The event running order. The conference will include the following events. The first day, accommodation allocation, welcomes, lunch, charity-wide updates and a formal dinner. Second day, breakfast, group discussions, lunch Q&A, feedback and farewells. Members with large travelling distances are provided the opportunity to arrive at Aston Conference Centre between 3 and 4 on the first day. The accommodation free for attendees. Transport. The conference is located to minimise travel and cost for attendees. Travelling by train, the nearest train station is New Street Station, Station Street, Birmingham, B24QA. Travelling by vehicle, you will be sent a link to secure on-campus parking if accepted to attend. Alternative parking is available at Millennium Point, Pay and Display, B47AP. Aston Conference Centre is located within a clean air zone. Charges may apply. For more information, visit Brum Breathes. Express your interest in attending on www.blindveterans.org.uk/conference25 or by ringing 0300 111 2233 or emailing us at supporter.services@blindveterans.org.uk. Meet some of our marathon runners. The London Marathon 2025 is fast approaching, and among the thousands of participants, 4 remarkable individuals be running in support of Blind Veterans UK. Each runner has a unique story and a personal motivation that fuels their dedication to this iconic event. Etty from Bristol is running the marathon to honour her grandmother's 100th birthday. Her grandmother, a Second World War veteran, has been a recipient of Blind Veterans UK support after losing her sight. Etty's participation is a tribute to her grandmother's resilience and the charity's invaluable assistance. Osman, a passionate Blind Veterans UK employee, is driven by the extraordinary stories of grit and determination he witnesses among the blind veterans he supports. Their unyielding spirit serves as his daily inspiration, and running the marathon is his way of giving back to those who have given so much. Pete has a deeply personal connection to the cause, as his father was a blind veteran. Running in his father's memory, Pete aims to raise awareness and funds for Blind Veterans UK, which played a crucial role in his father's life. This marathon is a heartfelt tribute to his father's legacy. Sarah is participating in honour of her best friend, who is a blind veteran. Her friend's unwavering positivity and strength, despite the challenges, have deeply inspired Sarah. By running the marathon, she hopes to highlight the incredible resilience of Blind Veterans UK and support the charity's mission. Each of these runners embodies the spirit of determination and compassion. Their participation in the London Marathon 2025 is not just about crossing the finish line, but also about making a difference in the lives of blind veterans. Let's cheer them on as they take on this monumental challenge. For more details on their stories and to support their fundraising efforts, visit www.blindveterans.org.uk/runners stories. And that's runner stories. I'll spell that RUNNERSTORIES, or one word.
In your community, hear about some of the social gatherings across the country that have taken place this spring and brought together members in their local areas. Our veterans enjoy meeting up, having trips out together, and enjoying the company of others who understand what they are going through. Here you can hear a brief roundup of some of the events that have taken place across the country this month in the communities that have allowed our veterans to come together. In Durham, great gathering this month for our Durham members and surrounding area at our Chesterler Street group, which continues to grow and go from strength to strength. Fun, good grub and a sing-along were all enjoyed. In Peterborough, this month communities 12 and 15 combined to take members to the longest yarn exhibition in the magnificent setting of Peterborough Cathedral. It was amazing, with 80 scenes taken from the film The Longest Day. The Longest Yarn is an exhibition of knitted scenes that is travelling across the UK this year. Members loved the exhibition and the lunch in the tea rooms afterwards. Thanks go to our volunteer, Paul Roebuck, for his help and powers of description. In Swansea, we had a great turnout at the Swansea Lunch Club at the Grand Hotel. Members had their own private room, and the CSW brought out a little karaoke machine, which was thoroughly enjoyed by members after they had cleared their delicious food. In Sandhurst, members, guests and staff attended our first military dinner of 2025 at RMA Sandhurst on the 28th of February, home to Training the Future Leaders of the British Army and recognised as a world-leading military training academy. This stunning and iconic setting enabled members to take part in a guided tour of old college building, celebrate remarkable achievements of two members who each received a Founders Day Award, enjoy a delicious three-course meal within the Indian War Memorial Room, and listen to the Military Wives Choir sing. RMA Sandhurst leadership, Brigadier Nick White Boycott and Lieutenant Colonel Daniel O'Connor, joined us along with one of our trustees, Tim Seal, and his wife Melanie. Lieutenant Colonel O'Connor kindly gave a speech about the Gulf War, detailing 34 years since the conflict ended on the 28th of February 1991. A fantastic day, wonderful to see so many members attend, and thank you to all who helped make this day so special for all who attended. Do you want to know what's going on in your local area? Contact your local community team, who can tell you everything you need to know.
Caring in Crisis. John Hardy's recollections of his service in the Gulf War. On the 2nd of August 1990, Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein ordered his army forces to invade Kuwait. By the next day, his troops had advanced to the Saudi Arabian border with plans to annex what he called Iraq's 19th province. The crisis quickly gained international attention, prompting the United States to lead a coalition of 42 nations against Iraq. This effort unfolded in two phases. Operation Desert Shield, which saw a military build-up from August 1990 to January 1991, and Operation Desert Storm, beginning with aerial bombardments on the 17th of January 1991. British forces played a crucial role, operating under the code name Operation Granby. The Gulf War saw devastating losses, an estimated 20,000 to 50,000 Iraqi soldiers killed in action, compared to 292 coalition deaths. Amid this global conflict, countless individuals, like Nurse John Hardy, served in essential, often unsung roles. Stationed at the MENA Hospital in Riyadh's King Khalid International Airport, John found himself tackling challenges far beyond the medical. The environment was incredibly tough, John recalled. The hospital wasn't even fully built. Dust and dirt were everywhere. Pigeons flew through the wards, and many of us came down with kennel cough due to bird droppings. Despite these hardships, John's team of reservists worked tirelessly to provide care in a hospital with 1,000 beds, operating as the main evacuation hub and refueling point, a situation that made it a significant target for Iraqi forces. John's role was far from simple. Initially, the unit was critically under-equipped, forcing him to think on his feet. We didn't have vital supplies, like endotracheal tubes, he shared. A friend and I took matters into our own hands, literally crawling under a Land Rover to secure transport, so we could visit the American hospital in Riyadh and borrow equipment. His resourcefulness became a hallmark of his service. Throughout the conflict, John witnessed a spectrum of injuries, from gunshot wounds and fractures to blast-related minor burns and complications like dehydration. Many soldiers weren't drinking enough in the oppressive heat, he explained. The air was so dry and humid, you felt like you needed water with every breath. Despite the grueling conditions, John remained grateful. I consider myself lucky. We didn't have the volume of patients we could have had. Beyond the medical, the threat of Scud missile attacks loomed large. Between the 18th of January and the 26th of February 1991, Iraq launched 46 missiles at Riyadh. We'd hear the American warning system bear black, 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 and rush to shelters, John recounted. But for patients we couldn't move, we had to improvise, placing them under metal-framed beds or sealing them in protective CBRN body bags. The constant use of CBRN gear left our hands raw. It was brutal. Amid the chaos, John formed bonds that endured long after the war. One particularly moving story involved a member of the SAS who was brought to the hospital with a gunshot wound that narrowly missed his kidney. We had to surgically debride the wound and care for him over the weeks. He didn't want to leave, he wanted to stay with his unit. Their shared experiences, including their sons, both named Ben, created a strong connection. When the soldier finally returned to his unit, he left John a gift, a bottle of rum, and words John would never forget. I told him he was a hero, but he pointed at me and said, "I'm not the hero, you are. You left your family to look after us guys. You're the heroes." The story didn't end there. Years later, John tracked down his former patient, now living in a care facility, battling Korsakoff's dementia. PTSD and acquired brain injury. Despite the challenges, John visits regularly. Most of the time he doesn't recognize me, but on one occasion he did. He put his hand on my knee and said, "Is it Doc?" It was incredibly emotional. For John, the Gulf War isn't just a chapter of his past, it's a thread woven into his life. His ongoing care for his former patient exemplifies the enduring bonds formed in service. "The Gulf is still with me today," he said. "Caring isn't just something you leave behind, it stays with you." John Hardy's story is a testament to resilience, compassion, and the lasting impact of service. Blind Veterans UK is proud to share such extraordinary accounts honouring the end of the Second World War to those who've dedicated themselves to the care and support of others, even decades later.
Remnants of a Brutal War, VE Day 80. While millions celebrated the end of the war, many also felt the weight of loss, the countless lives sacrificed, and years of relentless hardship. As we approach the 80th anniversary of Victory in Europe, VE Day, we reflect not only on the triumphs, but also on the profound sacrifices made during the Second World War. While the end of the war, on May 8, 1945, brought immense relief and joy, it also left indelible marks on many servicemen and women. Three blind veterans, Alice, Derek and Joan, share their poignant stories, shedding light on the complexities of that historic day and the enduring impact of war. Alice's story, joy intertwined with sorrow. At 17, Alice volunteered for the Women's Royal Naval Service, WRENN, and was assigned to Bletchley Park, the epicentre of code-breaking operations. Her role involved operating Alan Turing's bomb machines, crucial in deciphering enemy communications. The work was demanding, with round-the-clock shifts and strict secrecy. Alice recalls the moment the war ended. "We couldn't believe it for a moment. And then, oh, we cried and laughed and danced down the corridor. No more night watch." However, the celebration was bittersweet. Among her close-knit group of five friends, two had lost their brothers in the war. This juxtaposition of elation and grief exemplifies the mixed emotions many felt on VE Day. Reflecting on her time at Bletchley Park, Alice admits that the significance of their work wasn't fully understood until years later. "It wasn't until I went back to Bletchley Park for a reunion after the war that I understood what went on there and why it was so important." Derek's story, survival against the odds. Derek, now 100, served as a pilot with the 112 Squadron, famously known as the Shark Squadron. During a raid over Italy, his aircraft was shot down. After crash landing uninjured, he was captured and became a prisoner of war. His captivity led him to Stalag Luft 7, a prisoner of war camp characterised by rudimentary conditions. It was just a ring of barbed wire, watchtowers, and a lot of 6-foot huts like garden sheds. As the Germans retreated, Derek and thousands of other prisoners of war were forced on the infamous Long March to Germany. Enduring sub-zero temperatures, minimal food and inadequate shelter, they faced immense hardships. "We had to march to Berlin. I mainly remember how cold it was. We used to go to sleep in these barns and dig a little hole in the hay." Derek's liberation came just before VE Day, marking the end of a harrowing chapter in his life. Joan's story, a narrow escape. Joan, now 100, served in the Auxiliary Territorial Service, the ATS, as a Morse code operator. After 2 years in Italy, she was thrilled to return home upon hearing of the war's end. She was scheduled to return to Italy after a brief leave, but her plans changed unexpectedly. When we were due to go back, I couldn't go as my mother was taken very ill, so my leave was extended. Well, sadly, the plane crashed. There were 26 women on board, all killed. This tragic incident remains the largest single loss of female service personnel during the war. Joan reflects on the gravity of the event. It is important to commemorate the anniversary. I'll be thinking of the friends I lost, all 26 of them. A new challenge. Today, Alice, Derek and Joan face a new challenge, sight loss. All have been very vocal in their gratitude for our support. Alice says, Blind Veterans UK has been marvellous. They loaned me a talking magnifier, which has become my lifeline, as it means I can still read. Whilst Derek and Joan both value the social connections fostered by the charity, Joan says, I also go to get-togethers and someone comes to visit too, which is very pleasant. Someone's there if you want advice. The stories of Alice, Derek and Joan serve as poignant reminders of the sacrifices made during the Second World War and the enduring spirit of those who served. If you would like to learn more about their stories and watch their video interviews, please visit www.blindveterans.org.uk/VEday80.
Special Blind Veteran Made VE Day candles available now. Member Tony Haskey is making and selling special candles to mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day. Tony, 65, from Poole in Dorset, has been making candles for the past 3 years from a specially set up room in his home. Wanting to do something to mark the important anniversary, and also give back to the charity for the support he has received, Tony has chosen to donate 50% of the profits raised from his VE Day candles to the charity. Tony says, I started making candles as a hobby after I retired from work. I was feeling frustrated, sat at home and wanted to do something that would allow me to give back to the charities that had supported me, but also to have a reason to stay active and to get up each day. I've been selling the candles I make for the past year, and for 2 years prior to that, I was working to establish a method of candle making that would work for me with my sight loss. I did get to a point where I became so frustrated that I wanted to give up, but I persevered and have now perfected my candle making. Making candles when you're vision impaired presents challenges, but I've got some tricks up my sleeve which helps me in the process. For example, I use talking scales to weigh up the fragrance I'm using. I purchase wax in blocks of certain weights so I can cut them to the right size consistently. I also have my magnifier which helps me read the labels on the fragrance bottles so I know what I'm making. Tony hopes that people around the country will join together on the 8th of May to light a candle and remember the fallen. He says VE Day means an enormous amount to me as a veteran myself. I joined up to the Royal Marines at 16 years old. As someone who is still fortunate to be here today, I look back at the legacy that the young men and women left behind and fail to see how anyone couldn't acknowledge their worth. We have our liberty today because of their sacrifice. Tony was serving on an operation overseas when he first felt something was wrong with his vision. He saw a medic who advised that he had an incurable eye condition, and Tony was told to return to the UK. He says, I was feeling low. I had to return to the UK alone and leave my unit and comrades behind. On his return to England, Tony was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. This condition worsens over time and can affect vision in a number of ways, such as night blindness, trouble adjusting to light changes, difficulty seeing colours, and narrowed peripheral vision. He says, "I was 27 years old at that point and my world fell apart. I was absolutely devastated by the news. I went home from the hospital and started to contemplate what I had been told. I got depressed and felt that that was the end for me. The career I'd set up to do well at had come to an end. I didn't know what job opportunities were available to me. I was frightened and alone." Tony continued in a clerical role with the Royal Marines for 2 years before being medically discharged. It was in 1993 that Tony discovered Blind Veterans UK. He attended a 6-week course which included basic housekeeping, cooking and computer literacy skills. He says, "When I arrived at Brighton, I was in a deep void with no self-confidence, no self-worth and no self-belief. I had not imagined I would be made to feel so welcome, and I learned a lot more than I anticipated. Every day of the course was a new beginning. I was away from my family, but I knew that by spending the time on myself, I might be able to find a new career." Tony came away from the course and had the confidence to return to education, eventually completing an information technology degree at Bournemouth University. He says, "I was supported by the charity while I was on the course. They were always interested in what I was achieving and how I was progressing. On completing my degree, I was employed by a company who knew about my sight problems and took a chance on me. Within 5 years, I had moved up to be a support manager. A career I could never have imagined would have happened without the support of Blind Veterans UK. The charity also installed special lighting in my home, which means that I can make the most of the sight I have left. It's helped no end with my candle-making pursuits. I hope the sale of my candles will help the charity to support more blind veterans like myself. Please visit the Sea Breeze Candles website to order one of Tony's After the Darkness candles. 50% of the profits will be donated to Blind Veterans UK. Sea Breeze Candles, that's all one word, seabreezecandles.co.uk.
Our Invictus Games champions. Members Mark Abel and Andy Allen made the journey to Vancouver in Canada for this year's Invictus Games. We spoke to them on their return to find out how they got on. The Invictus Games brought together over 500 competitors from 22 nations in February to compete in a range of adaptive sports. Since 2014, the Games has supported the rehabilitation of wounded, injured and sick service personnel and veterans through the use of sport. This year's Invictus Games was the first to feature winter adaptive sports, including alpine and Nordic skiing, which both Mark and Andy took part in. Between them, Mark and Andy competed in 9 events and returned with 7 medals. But the Invictus Games is about far more than winning podium places. Andy, 36 and from Belfast, has been a member with the charity since 2008. Andy joined the 1st Battalion, the Royal Irish Regiment, in 2006. He was deployed to Afghanistan in 2008, and in July of that year, he was seriously injured in a Taliban bomb attack in the Helmand province, losing both of his legs along with his sight. He competed for the first time in the Invictus Games and took part in the 1-minute rowing, silver, 4-minute rowing, gold, wheelchair rugby, silver, and Nordic skiing, bronze. Andy says, "Taking part in the Invictus Games brought back the feeling of camaraderie and team working. It felt good to be back in a service environment, as you can lose that when you leave. The games provide an opportunity to recognise that regardless of disability, we can still achieve remarkable goals. Anything is possible. Yes, sometimes we may need some support and help, but the Invictus Games shows that there are adaptations available to us and we can take part in the sports we enjoy. Not everyone will want to compete, but for you that could mean going to your local gym. Mark, 58 and from Worcester, joined the army at 16 years old and learnt to ski while serving. He thought his days on the slopes were behind him after he became unwell and took himself to bed, but woke a few hours later and told his fiancée that he couldn't see and that she needed to take him to hospital. Mark was told that there had been damage to the optic nerves caused by multiple sclerosis. This was Mark's second visit to the Invictus Games, having taken part in Orlando in 2016. Mark was selected in May 2024. He says the process to being selected for the Invictus Games starts with an open application process in which you send off a 1-minute video explaining why you think you should take part, which then goes to a panel. It isn't about being the fastest or most skilled. The Invictus Games is about resilience and overcoming adversity by using sport as a means of recovery. It's an honour and a privilege to show others across the world what can be achieved. Being back in a military environment feels fantastic. It's one big, happy, sporting family. I also had my wife and my daughter accompany me to Canada. It's massively important to have the support of family and friends. I would like to thank the Royal British Legion, who not only funded my training and travel costs, but also funded my wife and daughter to be able to join me. Mark competed in alpine skiing, in which he was put in a different category against able-bodied athletes. 50-metre freestyle swimming, silver, 50-metre breaststroke, bronze, 4x50-metre relay, bronze, and the 1-minute sprint indoor rowing, in which he recorded a personal best of 272 metres in 1 minute. Mark says, I've always been quite sporty and I've kept reasonably fit. Blind Veterans UK have been a great help. The team got me back into skiing. Skiing is my safe place. Being in the mountains, I'm not tied to my long cane. I'm free. Mark and Andy told us about some of the adaptations in place. Rowing. Both men had a coach alongside them who read out the details on the screen, including pace, distance and time remaining. Skiing. A guide who relays information needed to stay safe, such as weather conditions, obstacles, hazards and light and shade. Swimming. Assistance on the diving block. And rugby. Andy had never played wheelchair rugby before. Prior to the Invictus Games, there were around 7 training camps in which it was important to work on communication with the team and for them to learn about his visual impairment.
The Veterans Art Project, VE80. The Member Engagement Team and National Creative Project teamed up and asked members to submit their artwork and photography inspired by the 80th anniversary of Victory in Europe Day. They have not been disappointed and are excited to share with you some of the pieces that have been submitted. These pieces will now be exhibited online and at our upcoming events, including military dinners, and presented as gifts. Brian's story. One of the members who submitted his artwork is 87-year-old Brian Naylor. Brian joined the Royal Navy in November 1959 after completing an apprenticeship in the Merchant Navy. He spent 12 years in the Navy flying in helicopters. Upon retirement, Brian joined the Royal Navy Reserve and finally retired in 1999. Brian shares with us how his love of painting came about. I'd dabbled in watercolour painting while at sea, mainly cartooning for ship and squadron informal records and family birthday and Christmas cards, all very amateur and just for fun. After a gap of more than 30 years, and having been diagnosed with age-related macular degeneration in 2012, I assumed that my amateur art days were over. In late 2020, I was cleaning out a cupboard and found some art materials. I spent a couple of hours looking at tutorials on the internet and re-sparked my interest. Soon I was trying out new techniques and discovering that loose watercolour painting is still possible. My sight does prevent detailed work and sometimes colours surprise me. I'm still at the beginner's stage and much of my work ends up as a muddy puddle in the bin, but I'm beginning to understand that less is more and avoiding the urge to get into detail. Art, at a very simple level, is now part of my life again and brings both frustration and pleasure with the occasional happy surprise. I'm still in the process of translating a picture in my mind to something similar on paper. But the challenge is to try to capture those images, those moments, which make the process and the disappointments worth the effort. I use magnifiers to get the uniforms right, and I search the internet for pictures using bits of them to get the details correct. Brian lived in London during the Second World War. He was collected from an orphanage by his parents on the same day that war was declared in 1939. I don't remember VE Day itself, but I have memories from that time. I remember being rescued from the basement after the house two doors down from us took a direct hit during the Blitz, and I remember watching aeroplanes in the sky, thinking it was great fun. VE Day was a day of celebration and of people dancing in the street, but looking back 80 years later, and the celebration was the end of something dreadful. The cost in lives of that war was enormous. We must now learn to stop it from happening again, and we must remember the sacrifices. People ought to remember that sons, cousins, and uncles went to war enthusiastically, but the last time they were seen was walking away. Then the telegrams arrived.
Running 10K to mark VE Day 80. Member Wayne Pope from Somerset is running the Worthing 10K just 2.5 years after he was diagnosed with a rare sight loss disease and his life was turned upside down. Wayne, 44 and from Bridgewater, will be taking on the challenge, which starts and ends next to Worthing Pier on the 4th of May. Wayne says, "This run takes place just a few days before a very significant date for many of our fellow blind veterans. The 80th anniversary of VE Day on the 8th of May. Blind Veterans UK has supported me since I was diagnosed and have also supported men and women who were involved in securing victory in Europe. Those soldiers, sailors and pilots had no choice. Failure wasn't an option. They gave their lives and many their sight to secure our freedom. I'm immensely proud that the money I raise for completing this challenge will ensure that veterans like them and those who followed will continue to receive life-changing support as I have." Wayne served in the Royal Navy for 4.5 years as an able seaman warfare specialist on board HMS Chatham and HMS Monmouth. He was diagnosed with the degenerative eye condition, retinitis pigmentosa, in December 2022. The condition worsens over time and can affect vision in a number of ways, such as night blindness, trouble adjusting to light changes, difficulty seeing colours, and narrowed peripheral vision. "In September 2022, I noticed some issues with my sight and went to Specsavers for an eye test. While there, I was offered a scan, which looks at the back of the retina for any issues. This is where the anomalies were detected. The special consultant at Specsavers proceeded to arrange for subsequent investigations. My life changed completely when I got my diagnosis and walked out of the consultant's office. It all came as a shock. I'd walked into that office as an independent man and walked out knowing my life was going to change. I lost my confidence and sense of purpose. I was in tears. My life turned upside down, not knowing how to digest what I'd just been told. I just didn't understand the disease or how I would go forward. The person I'd been before now required an adaptive way of going forward into the future. This is what I called point zero, day one. My visual impairment made me feel less confident and safe taking part in my usual day-to-day activities and other aspects of my life. Taking my daughters to school would no longer be as simple as jumping in the car. I'd lost my driving license upon diagnosis. I knew I was going to have to reassess everyday activities. The residual sight I still have centrally overworks itself, leading to immense fatigue and stress. But I was not about to let life just stop. The vision I do retain is a tunnel view perspective with no peripheral vision, no colour, and difficulty with depth perception. The nature of the disease is unpredictable and no 2 days are the same. In spring 2023, Wayne discovered Blind Veterans UK while searching on the internet for support. He says, "In the short time I've been supported by the charity, I've received rehabilitation, advice and equipment that have helped me to get back into running, playing my guitar and completing everyday activities that I took for granted before. I've been offered tips to overcome the difficulties presented by my sight loss, and Specsavers have provided me with specially adapted yellow-tinted prescription glasses. The staff and my fellow veterans are a huge support. Someone is always on the end of the phone if I need them, and the other members I've met are going to be friends for life. While staying at the Rustington Centre, I was asked to share some of the things I'd like to achieve that seemed out of reach to me because of my sight loss. I shared my dream of taking part in the London Marathon. The wellbeing team at the centre offered to support my aspirations by helping me train and prepare for the Worthing 10km. With a view to being able to take part in the London Marathon alongside other members in 2026. They could see how running was giving me back my confidence, sense of purpose, and allowing me to feel like the person I was before sight loss. The fitness also helps with my mental health. I no longer feel like a failure. The charity has given me back my independence to be the person I want to be. As a result, I would like to use my journey to help others receive the same support that I have. I now live each day with the sight I have, not knowing what I'll wake up with when I open my eyes, but with the support of family, friends and Blind Veterans UK, I'm not going to let my sight loss change me." Wayne is hoping to raise £500 for Blind Veterans UK. If you would like to support Wayne in reaching his target, please visit his Just Giving page, blindveterans.org.uk/Wayne. Wayne is one of many members and supporters undertaking activities to commemorate and celebrate VE Day while raising vital funds. If you are inspired by Wayne and would like to get involved, visit our website, blindveterans.org.uk.
A tool for freedom. How a simple long white cane helped member Terry regain his independence and use his experience to support a fellow member. When blind veterans Terry and Dave met at a Blind Veterans UK coffee morning in Sleaford, Lincolnshire, they quickly realised how much they had in common. Both had long military careers, both lost their sight later in life, and both had hesitated at the thought of using a long cane. But, as Dave soon discovered, Terry had already learned what a difference the right support could make. "It gave me my freedom back." Terry spent 22 years serving with the Royal Green Jackets, with postings from Berlin to Cyprus and the Falklands. After leaving the army, he enjoyed civilian life and spent his free time fishing until he noticed something wasn't right. I couldn't see to tie knots when fishing. I went to the optician, and before I knew it, I was being sent to the hospital. I was diagnosed with age-related macular degeneration, and my vision just got worse from there. Terry struggled to come to terms with his sight loss. I was angry. I kept asking myself, why me? What have I done to deserve this? Everyday things like making a cup of tea or crossing the road became so frustrating. I felt like I couldn't do anything without someone guiding me. I felt like I'd lost my independence. Things started to change when Terry was introduced to Blind Veterans UK. His community support worker, Lizzie, suggested he attend a long cane training. I thought, that's not for me. I didn't want people looking at me differently, but Terry's wife wasn't having it. She told me, people are putting themselves out for you. You should give something back. So I went, and at first I was petrified. I was used to holding on to someone's arm, but with the cane, suddenly I had nothing to lean on, and I started to panic. I just couldn't get in step with it. The next day, Terry tried again and took the cane outside for the first time. I started thinking about my army drill movements. The cane goes to your right, your left leg moves forward. It's like swinging your arms in drill. It suddenly clicked. I could feel what surface I was on. I could tell if there was something in front of me. And then I realized I was free. I didn't have to rely on anyone anymore. Now Terry calls the cane his tool for freedom. I used to sit indoors and mope, but now I've got my cane, nothing stops me. I'm off. Helping a fellow veteran. When Terry met Dave for the first time, he immediately recognized the reluctance he once had. Dave, who spent more than 30 years in the RAF as a pilot and air traffic controller, had also been diagnosed with macular degeneration. I thought it wasn't for me, that I wasn't ready for it. My sight loss has been gradual, so I've managed. I wear good boots for bumpy surfaces, and I can walk about quite freely during the day. I don't generally fall over. I might tumble or bump into things, he admitted. But as time went on, things became harder. My central vision has gotten worse. At home, I struggle with pouring tea or cooking. Dave was given practical support, including a magnifier and a talking watch. But like Terry, he wasn't keen on cane training. That changed when they met at a Blind Veterans UK coffee morning in Sleaford. Dave said he didn't want a cane, that he didn't need it. Terry recalled, I told him that was my attitude, mate. But once I got my cane, it opened everything up. There's no shame in it, far from it. It gives you your independence back. Dave shared, Terry told me he had felt the same way, but now he wouldn't be without it. We come from similar service backgrounds, so his words stuck with me. At the coffee morning, Terry let Dave try out his cane, showing him how to treat it like a drill movement. I think that's what pinned it for him, Terry said. I hope he does the training and makes it work for him. And Dave? I've booked my first week of training now, he shared. I'm hoping to do some physio too, so I can keep walking for a long time. The power of peer support. For both Terry and Dave, meeting fellow veterans who understood their struggles made all the difference. Now, both veterans make it a point to encourage others. At meetups, I make a point of speaking to everyone, Dave added. Some people are quiet or don't know what to expect, so I ask about their service or what they've been up to. It's good to connect. because sometimes it's just a conversation over coffee that makes the biggest difference.
Digital Inclusion Glossary. As the world of technology has grown, it has developed its own language and terms. In this month's Digital Inclusion article, we have put together a glossary of the common terms you may encounter. If this article flags any queries you have about your current technology, or you would like to find out how digital inclusion can positively impact your day-to-day life, please contact the MeSH helpline or speak to a Blind Veterans UK worker. Accessibility. Accessibility in technology ensures that devices, apps, and websites can be used by everyone, including people with disabilities. Features like screen readers, voice commands, and adjustable text sizes help make technology inclusive. This allows individuals to interact with digital content easily and independently, enhancing their overall experience. AI stands for artificial intelligence. AI is technology that gives machines the ability to answer and perform complicated tasks that typically require human intelligence, such as learning, reasoning, problem solving, and understanding language. AI is utilized in lots of apps, including shopping, streaming, and navigation services. There are also productivity tools such as ChatGPT, Microsoft Copilot, Google Gemini, and Apple Intelligence available to the general public. Alexa. Alexa is a virtual voice assistant which uses AI to answer questions and do tasks such as playing music. You use Alexa by talking to it and asking it to do things. It works on Amazon Echo devices. There are other virtual assistants and smart speakers that work in the same way. Apps. Apps, short for applications, are software programs designed to perform specific tasks on devices like smartphones, tablets, and computers. They can range from games and social media platforms to productivity tools and educational resources. Apps are typically downloaded from app stores, such as the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, and can help users with various activities from entertainment to work. Backing up. Backing up is the process of making copies of your data to protect it from loss or damage. These copies can be stored on external drives, cloud services, or other storage devices. If your original data gets lost or corrupted, you can restore it from the backup, ensuring you don't lose important information. Broadband. Broadband is a high-speed internet connection that provides fast and reliable access to the internet. It can be delivered through various technologies. Broadband allows for activities like streaming videos, online gaming, and downloading large files without significant delays. Cookies. Cookies are small pieces of data stored on your device by websites you visit. They help websites remember your preferences, login information, and browsing activity. This makes your online experience more personalized and efficient. However, cookies can also track your online behavior, which raises privacy concerns for some users. When you first access a website that utilizes cookies, you are given the option to opt in or out of this. The cloud. The cloud is like a giant online storage space where you can save and access your files, photos, and data from any device connected to the internet. This can be a chargeable service, but it can free up space on your device and reduce risk of losing precious photos. Data allowance. If you aren't connected to Wi-Fi, using the internet on your smartphone or tablet uses mobile data, which is measured in megabytes, MB, and gigabytes, GB. Most phone and tablet contracts have monthly allowances for data usage. Once you use up your allowance, you might get charged for additional usage, or you might not be able to use mobile data until your allowance renews the next month. Notifications. Notifications are alerts or messages that inform you about updates, events, or actions on your devices or apps. They can appear as pop-ups, banners, or sounds, and help you stay informed about new emails, messages, app updates, calendar events, and more. Notifications help to make sure you don't miss important information or activities. Operating systems. Operating systems, OS, are software that manage computer hardware and software resources, providing a platform for applications to run. They handle tasks like memory management, file storage, and device control. Common examples include Windows, iOS, Linux, and Android. An OS ensures your device operates smoothly and efficiently. Phishing. Phishing is an attempt at identity theft in which criminals direct users to a fake website to trick them into disclosing private information, such as usernames or passwords. Podcasts. Podcasts are audio programs that you can listen to on demand. They cover a wide range of topics from news and storytelling to education and entertainment. Podcasts are typically released as episodes and can be streamed or downloaded on devices like smartphones, tablets, and computers. Popular platforms for podcasts include Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Pop-ups. A pop-up is a small window that suddenly appears or pops up on a web page, usually an advertisement or an alert. Profiles. Your profile is a description that may include your personal details and is used to identify you on a social media website. This can be set as public, viewed by everyone, or private, only viewed by certain people. Smart technology. Smart technology refers to devices and systems that use advanced computing and connectivity to perform tasks autonomously or interactively. These technologies often incorporate AI, sensors, and internet connectivity to enhance functionality and user experience. Examples include phones and tablets, and smart home devices like thermostats and security cameras, wearable fitness trackers, and smart appliances. Notifications. Notifications are alerts or messages that inform you about updates, events, or actions on your devices or apps. They can appear as pop-ups, banners, or sounds, and helps you stay informed about new emails, messages, app updates, calendar events, and more. Notifications ensure you don't miss important information or activities. Social media. Social media refers to online platforms and applications that enable people to create, share, and interact with content and other people. These platforms facilitate communication, network, and community building. Examples include Facebook, Twitter, now X, Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Social media allows people to connect with friends, share updates, and discover new information. Streaming services. Streaming services are online platforms that allow you to watch or listen to content in real time without downloading it. They offer a wide range of media, including movies, TV shows, and music. Domestic television providers such as BBC, ITV, and Sky also provide their content as a streaming service. Updates. Updates are improvements or fixes released for software, apps, or operating systems. They can include new features, security patches, and performance enhancements. Regular updates help keep your devices secure, efficient, and up to date with the latest technology. It's important to install updates to ensure optimal functionality and protection against vulnerabilities. You will generally be notified by your device when an update is required. Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is a technology that allows devices to connect to the internet wirelessly using radio waves. It enables you to access the internet from smartphones, tablets, computers, and other devices without needing physical cables. Wi-Fi networks are commonly found in homes, offices, and public spaces, providing convenient and flexible internet access. To access Wi-Fi at home, you will require a broadband connection.
Gardening with low vision. The act of gardening helps us to keep fit and connect with others, to enjoy and be part of nature, and to revel in colour, aroma, wildlife, and beauty. We are now well and truly into spring, and many of our members will be getting out into the garden to clear the weeds and the mind. Gardening is one of the best hobbies there is for someone with sight loss, as it can be as simple or as complex as you like. Even if you don't have a garden of your own, the joys of a few pots of colour around the house or a handful of homegrown herbs can be a big boost. With a bit of thought, you can fill your space with colours bright enough for you to see, or with beautiful, unique scents and textures. Growing your own fruit and veg can also be incredibly satisfying. These are some of the simple gardening techniques used by our veterans. Think about contrast. It can be helpful to buy gardening tools and pots in bright colours that stand out. It's also a good idea to go for flowers or fruits that have bright or contrasting colours. Organise your space. Put things where you can find them, and not just your tools, but your flowers and plants too. Some of our members organise their gardens in a very structured way to help them find their way around. Others mark plants with fluorescent golf balls or painted stones so that they know where to water and where to weed. As much as possible, keeping everything clean and tidy will help you avoid accidents. Use seed tapes. If you're planting from seed, you may want to try seed tapes, which you can buy from most garden centres. Stuck into a biodegradable cloth, these seeds are much easier to handle and space. You can get seed tapes in various shapes and sizes, and even with mixes of vegetables or flowers on the same tape. Take extra care. Without the use of your sight, it's far easier to injure yourself on gardening tools and the like, so take extra care. For example, protect yourself from canes. If you're using canes to support your plants, always pop a small plant pot or cap on the top. Keep tools together. Keep all your tools together in a bucket pointed downwards. Sharpen your tools. As with cooking, a sharp blade will often be safer than a dull one, as you have better control and need less force. Wear gardening gloves. Always wear gloves to protect your hands, even if you're just pulling out a few weeds. With just a few adaptations, you can carry on your gardening hobby or even start from scratch if you've never even gardened before. Many of our community teams run gardening groups that are either over the phone or in person, so speak to your local team if you'd like to join or even set one up.
Member Voice. Our member engagement and military lead, Tim Eckersley, shares your latest news and updates. Annual Member Conference. This year's annual Bind Veterans UK conference provides the opportunity for members to engage with the senior leadership team in an environment that promotes questioning, feedback, and listening during an important time regarding our future strategy. The conference will be held between the 22nd and 23rd of May 2025 at Aston Conference Centre, Birmingham, B47ET, where accommodation will be provided for the evening of 22nd May 2025. To register for this event, please visit our website. VE80 event at Petwood Hotel. The VE80 event will take place at Petwood Hotel, Woodalls Spa, Lincolnshire, LN10 6QG, remembering victory in Europe 1945 on the 8th of May 2025. This event offers a unique experience to share memories, celebrate together, enjoy a delicious buffet, and explore Second World War vehicles and equipment on display, courtesy of the Military Vehicle Trust. To register for this event, please visit our website. Remembrance Weekend, Cenotaph 2025. There will be four main events in London for Blind Veterans UK over Remembrance Weekend in November 2025. Members are provided the opportunity to register for as many events as they like. However, due to limited spaces available for the Festival of Remembrance and Remembrance Parade, names will be chosen via a random ballot. Sir Arthur Pearson Memorial Service at Hampstead Cemetery, London, on Saturday, 8th of November, between 11 a.m. and midday. Festival of Remembrance at the Royal Albert Hall, London, on Saturday, the 8th of November, arrival from 1 p.m. Informal evening social event at the Victory Services Club, London, on Saturday, the 8th of November, between 6 and 10 p.m. And Remembrance Parade at the London Cenotaph on Sunday, the 9th of November, between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. For further information and to register for Remembrance events, please visit our website.
National Creative Project. This month's VI-friendly creative activities you can take part in all from the comfort of your own home. Here is the April programme of VI-friendly creative activities to take part in from home. Please call 01273 391 447 to leave a message on the NCP answer machine and request a project pack. You can also request a pack on the members area of the website. All projects come with VI-friendly instructions and the option of audio instructions on a USB stick or by email if you request it. You are welcome to take part in as many projects as you like. Woodland Trio Mouse. By popular request, we have identified some simple wooden model kits so many members as possible can take part. Throughout the rest of this year, we will be offering three woodland models, which will then stay available on a permanent basis after the autumn. The first one is a mouse. This 25-piece kit is perfect for beginners and experienced model makers alike. As with all our models, you'll receive a step-by-step graphic guide to help you identify the pieces. The hedgehog and squirrel will be available later this year. Botanical Sketchbook. This is a sketchbook kit for beginners and improvers. There are specially chosen craft materials for visually impaired artists, some botanical tactile prompts, and a supplement from member Steve Halliwell for inspiration. Watercolour Pencils Kit. Our watercolour kit contains a set of watercolour pencils that activate when water is added, along with a variety of brushes and some paper. It also comes with some hints and tips from member and watercolour artist Peter Murphy. Spring Mandala Mosaic. We are so pleased to hear so many of you have enjoyed making our seasonal mandalas. We've enjoyed picking out some delicate floral colours for the spring mandala, which will come with pre-sorted and labelled tiles in separate bags and everything else you need for your mosaic. The summer mandala will be ready in a few months for you to complete the set. Also available, Dragon Boat. We still have a few kits left. This is a 141-piece wooden model kit which measures 28 centimetres high, 36 centimetres long and 16 centimetres wide when built. Each kit comes with a step-by-step graphic guide to help you find the right pieces. Papercraft scrapbook. We still have some scrapbook kits for you to make your own memory book using collage techniques. There are a few specially chosen items in there for those members who take part with grandchildren and other little helpers. Acrylic painting. We have a few acrylic painting kits available containing a variety of paints, brushes, a canvas and some suitable paper to practice on. Thank you for continuing to return your NCP surveys. They're so helpful and enable us to shape the service going forward. Thank you for all your suggestions for future projects. We will be looking to make some of these projects a reality in 2025. We always love hearing from you, whether it's to share photographs, feedback, or just have a chat about your crafting activities. Please don't hesitate to get in touch via ncwt@blindveterans.org.uk.
Quiz time. Our quizmaster, Ron Russell, tests your general knowledge. There are 7 questions. I'll read the question out, leave a space, and then give you the answer. So, question 1. Where does the Duke of Bedford live? And the answer? Woburn Abbey. Question 2. What mode of transport featured in the film Summer Holiday? And the answer? A London bus. Question 3. Which American city is named the Empire City? And the answer? New York. Question 4. Which bird hides with its head upside down? And the answer? The ostrich. Question 5. What is a third of 99? And the answer? 33. Question 6. What liquid measure is abbreviated as PT? And the answer? Pint. The last one, question 7. What is the Spanish name for Charles? And the answer? Carlos. Family news. Alan Dickens, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 24th of April. Alec Penstone, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 23rd of April. Betty Thomas, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 10th of April. Catherine Drummond, who celebrates her 103rd birthday on the 7th of April. Peter Murphy, who celebrates his 101st birthday on the 12th of April. James Fenton, who celebrates his 103rd birthday on the 21st of April. Joan West, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 15th of April. John Morris, who celebrates his 103rd birthday on the 22nd of April. Joyce Pullman, who celebrates her 105th birthday on the 30th of April. Phyllis Vernon, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 4th of April. Robert Wheelhouse, who celebrates his 104th birthday on the 18th of April, and Sydney Jennings, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 18th of April. And all birthday information was correct at the time of going to press. Condolences. It is with deep regret that we record the deaths of the following, and we offer our heartfelt condolences. Wilma Harris, who died on the 1st of March 2025. She was the wife of Alan Harris. Irene Burden, who died on the 1st of February 2025, she was the wife of Stanley Burden. Elizabeth Hedrick, who died on the 1st of March 2025, she was the wife of James Brown Hedrick. Margaret Skinner, who died on the 7th of March 2025, she was the wife of William Henry Skinner. Brenda Bartlett, who died on the 1st of February 2025. She was the wife of David Henry Bartlett. And Rose Kavanagh, who died on the 1st of February 2025. She was the wife of Albert Thomas Nelson. In memory, it is with deep regret that we record the deaths of the following members, and we offer our heartfelt condolences to their widows, widowers, families and friends. Brian John Abel of Bath, Somerset, who died on the 19th of January 2025, aged 93. He served as a senior aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. David George Antrobus of Waterlooville, Hampshire, died on the 29th of December 2024, aged 70. He served as a pilot officer in the Royal Navy. Stanley Albert Booker of Christchurch, Dorset, died on the 26th of January 2025, aged 102. He served as a squadron leader in the Royal Air Force. Gerald Brown of Flintshire, died on the 9th of January 2025, aged 86. He served as a fusilier in the Royal Artillery. Barry Collings of Rugby, Warwickshire, died on the 10th of March 2025, aged 94. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Brian Frederick Arthur Constable of Barrow-in-Furness, Cumbria, died on the 14th of February 2025, aged 92. He served as a staff sergeant in the Royal Engineers. Wesley Cotton of Welshpool Powys died on the 16th of February 2025, aged 89. He served as a private in the Wiltshire Regiment, Duke of Edinburgh's. Arthur Davis of Warwick died on the 27th of February 2025, aged 98. He served as a private in the Royal Warwickshire Regiment. Kathleen Dodds of St Helens, Merseyside, died on the 28th of February 2025, aged 83. She served as a senior aircraft woman in the Women's Royal Air Force. Donald Graham Fearnley of Plymouth, Devon, died on the 11th of March 2025, aged 95. He served as a warrant officer in the Royal Navy. Dennis Frederick Gamblin of Liss, Hampshire, died on the 24th of January 2025, aged 98. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps and Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. George Charles Godfrey of Colchester, Essex, died on the 15th of March 2025, aged 96. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Brian Arthur Goodman of London died on the 12th of December 2024, aged 97. He served as a warrant officer in the Royal Army Educational Corps. Brian Gould of Widnes, Cheshire, died on the 15th of November 2024, aged 89. He served as a private in the Army Catering Corps. Henrietta Gow of Leyland, Lancashire, died on the 9th of March 2025, aged 96. She served as a private in the Auxiliary Territorial Service. Alan Geoffrey Greystock of Bradford, West Yorkshire, died on the 12th of March 2025, aged 94. He served as a leading airman in the Royal Air Force. Peter Harrison of Cheadle, Cheshire, died on the 1st of February 2025, aged 90. He served as a corporal in the Royal Air Force Police. Alexander Penman Watt Hart of Telford, Shropshire, died on the 1st of March 2025, aged 88. He served as a craftsman in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Kenneth George Hibbard of Spalding, Lincolnshire, died on the 24th of February 2025, aged 87. He served as a senior aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Marion Hibbins of Horncastle, Lincolnshire, died on the 10th of March 2025, aged 102. She served as a leading aircraft woman in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force. Arthur Higgins of Sheffield, South Yorkshire, died on the 30th of August 2024, aged 76. He served as a driver in the Royal Corps of Transport. Edward Hill of Salford, Greater Manchester, died on the 1st of March 2025, aged 90. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. Peter Hopp of Newcastle upon Tyne died on the 1st of February 2025, aged 95. He served as a major in the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment. Charles Houghton of Uxbridge, Middlesex, died on the 10th of February 2025, aged 95. He served as an aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Charles James of Spalding, Lincolnshire, died on the 7th of February 2025, aged 91. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Sidney Lee of Newport, Shropshire, died on the 4th of January 2025, aged 91. He served as a warrant officer in the Queen's Regiment. Cyril James Lewis of Bridgend, Mid Glamorgan, died on the 5th of March 2025, aged 103. He served as a private in the Royal Artillery. Stanley Ludlow of Ormskirk, Lancashire, died on the 2nd of February 2025, aged 96. He served as a private in the General Service Corps. Terence Lynch of Plymouth, Devon, died on the 16th of January 2025, aged 82. He served as a Marine in the Royal Marines. Alan Charles McIntosh of Marlborough, Wiltshire, died on the 10th of January 2025, aged 90. He served as a private in the Seaforth Highlanders, Rossshire Buffs, the Duke of Albany's. Malcolm Joseph Medcalf of Boston, Lincolnshire, died on the 8th of March 2025, aged 79. He served as a corporal in the Royal Army Service Corps. Peter Milner of Warrington, Cheshire, died on the 1st of December 2024, aged 91. He served as a bombardier in the Royal Artillery. Ernest John Moore of Llandudno died on the 1st of February 2025, aged 88. He served as a senior aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Desmond Morgan of Neath, West Glamorgan, died on the 30th of December 2024, aged 90. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. Ronald Morrison of Middlesbrough died on the 2nd of March 2025, aged 94. He served as a private in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. John Orme of St Helens, Merseyside, died on the 25th of December 2024, aged 93. He served as a sapper in the Royal Engineers. Brian Joseph Palmer of Deeside, Flintshire, died on the 14th of February 2025, aged 89. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Betty Parry of Pwllheli, Gwynedd, died on the 22nd of February 2025, aged 99. She served as a leading aircraftwoman in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force. James Lewis Pellow of Coventry died on the 2nd of March 2025, aged 95. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. Ronald Percy of Sheffield died on the 6th of January 2025, aged 96. He served as an aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Rosalie Helen Randall of Littlehampton, West Sussex, died on the 27th of February 2025, aged 100. She served as a nursing member in the Voluntary Aid Detachment. Stella Reed of Ormskirk, Lancashire, died on the 2nd of March 2025, aged 101. She served as a corporal in the Women's Royal Air Force. William Oliver Robertson of Paisley, Renfrewshire, died on the 10th of February 2025, aged 89. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. Robert Robinson of Durham died on the 1st of February 2025, aged 84. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Engineers. Sheila Margaret Saville of Hemel Hempstead, Hertfordshire, died on the 3rd of March 2025, aged 100. She served as a leading aircraft woman in the Women's Royal Air Force. Gordon Sefton of Bingley, West Yorkshire, died on the 1st of February 2025, aged 86. He served as a musician in the Army. Arthur Christian Shaw of Tame, Oxfordshire, died on the 22nd of February 2025, aged 95. He served as a craftsman in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. George Simpson of South Croydon died on the 3rd of March 2025, aged 101. He served as a corporal in the Royal Army Service Corps. Peter Simpson of St Leonard's-on-Sea, East Sussex, died on the 4th of March 2025, aged 87. He served as a sergeant in the Royal Air Force. Rosemary Vera Stone of Abingdon, Oxfordshire, died on the 21st of February 2025, aged 97. She served as a captain in the Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps. Edward Victor Tan of Addlestone, Surrey, died on the 6th of March 2025, aged 101. He served as an able seaman in the Royal Navy. Terence Roland Thomas of Porthcawl, Mid Glamorgan, died on the 17th of February 2025, aged 93. He served as a bombardier in the Royal Artillery. Ronald Thompson of Sheffield died on the 21st of February 2025, aged 96. He served in the Primary Training Wing. Colin James Timbrell of Clacton-on-Sea, Essex, died on the 12th of March 2025, aged 91. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Gertrude Tomlinson of Derby died on the 17th of February 2025, aged 96. She served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Signals. Thomas Walsh of Bognor Regis, West Sussex, died on the 1st of November 2024, aged 92. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Military Police. And Derek Whiting of Smethwick, West Midlands, died on the 13th of February 2025, aged 95. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Did you know that we can set up online tribute pages for the loved ones of staff, members and supporters? Find out more about setting up a tribute page at blindveteransuk.muchloved.org. Contact details. The contact address for Blind Veterans UK is 126 Fairlie Road, Slough, SL1 4PY, and the telephone number is 0300 111 2233. The Member Support Hub Mesh telephone number is 01273 391447. New members. Anyone who may be eligible to join Blind Veterans UK can phone our membership department on free phone 0800 389 7979. The Rustington Centre telephone number is 01903 945 300. The Llandudno Centre telephone number is 01492 868 700. The review editor can be contacted on telephone number 0300 111 2233, or at review editor, all one word, review editor at blindveterans.org.uk. To give us feedback on any of our services, please email us at supporter.services@blindveterans.org.uk or telephone 0300 111 2233. To make a donation, simply call 0300 111 2233 or visit blindveterans.org.uk/donate. To listen to review on Alexa, the command is Alexa, ask Tune In to play Blind Veterans UK Review. If you have any problems getting it to work, please contact the Mesh helpline on 01273 391 447. And if you would like to receive your copy of a review in a different format, please contact your community support worker or Rovi for more information.